This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and hitting subscribe on your friend's phone without them knowing. Coming to you from the kitchen studios in downtown Raleigh. This episode is sponsored in part by Spot On, tech that helps your business grow. Request a demo at spoton.com. And Joe Van Gogh Coffee, serving the community from seed to cup, taking particular care at every step to honor the bean. And now, conveniently leaving the table when the check comes, it's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today, I want to buzz in your ear a little bit, maybe sting in some knowledge to you.
Oh, boy.
That's right. We're talking all about bees. And here from Charlotte, North Carolina, is one Mr. Justin Orders, the owner, founder, creator of Queen's Orders Beekeeping. Welcome, Justin.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And yeah, feel free to make as many bee puns as you want. That's one of the joys of being a beekeeper is that you can do it as much as possible. So,
well, we'll be okay, honey.
There you go.
We'll be right back. But first, a word from our sponsors. No, before we get into it, just to give a reminder to everyone that listens to the show to think about us in your day and think about how other people might not know how great we are. And so you could spread the word like the way bees spread the pollen and, manufacture all this stuff by just writing a review. I'm just getting to reviews, folks. Just write us a review. Tell us how great we are. Leave all the negativity off. We don't need that.
Yeah, you can call us directly for that.
There's no room for that. But shoot us a review on iTunes. That's the best place to go, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And coming up on podcasts, we do have our chef friend out there in Wilmington, Dean Neff, of Seabird, who should be up soon. We also have Chef Saif Rahman of Vidrio, which will be great. And then Nick Singh, who's a co-owner of The Nomad in Hillsboro and The Viceroy in Durham. And Kevin McLaughlin of Lorema Coffee in Rocky Mount. So we got some fun shows coming up pretty soon. But now, let's get right back in the old hive.
Nice.
Let's talk bee talk. I've been excited for this all week. I've been telling people who listen to the show or whatever, I'm like, get ready, because we're gonna talk bees. We're gonna do all this fun stuff. And Justin, you had reached out to us to make us aware of you, and then we did some research on you, and we're like, oh yeah, this is kind of cool and pretty fascinating as to what you do. So let's start. You're coming out of Charlotte. You came up today from Charlotte to hang out and chat. How'd you get started in bees?
Yeah, first off, I also really love podcasts, so while I'm trying to get my name out there, I like the mix with bees and podcasts. I'm like, okay, I gotta do a podcast about bees somehow, some way. So,
heck yeah.
Yeah, I'm from Charlotte, born and raised. I did not mean for this to happen, honestly. For one, I don't love honey. Like, it's great. It's got a lot of properties, which we're going to get into. It's a lot of fun to get the honey. But more so, for me, it's my love of bees. So back in 2018, I got my first hive. Basically just bought it from a local beekeeper. I was working at a place, actually volunteering, and I saw that they had hives. I saw people working in them. There was all this crisis going on. Save the bees, you probably heard it. Save the pollinators. Yeah. Still going on to this day. It's a little bit better, honestly. So good news there. There's still things we can do about it. But regardless, back then it was my biggest concern. I was like, I need to do something about this. They're really important. So I started with buying one hive that year, basically just due to the help I got from the beekeeper community in Charlotte, that I was able to get through that year with another hive. So it split into another hive that gave me two. Next year, I went through the bee school in Mecklenburg County, learned a lot, and then turned those two into six. Then
by splitting them again, like you split the queens like you did with the first one?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That, which, by the way, don't do that in blackjack, but
yes,
in beekeeping, yeah.
It's you almost have to.
And like, aces. If you have aces, you split aces.
Yeah, you split aces, but don't split queens.
You always split aces.
Yeah.
Well, not always. No, you always do. Well, clearly not always.
Right.
Remember that movie? That's a swingers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry, I was just getting a note from Elizabeth there, but.
Anyhow,
our production assistant here.
So, okay, so you started your bee colony started growing, like, bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. All this while you were, like, were you selling honey? Were you, I mean, I assume, like in the very beginning, like, was this, like, initial, like, okay, I have these colonies, I'm doing this, like, I really don't know that much about what it means to run a bee hive, or what am I saying, a bee colony? What
is beehive it? Is fine.
A beehive? Yeah.
A collection of beehives is called an apiary.
Okay.
So that's usually what I define my operations as, my apiary. I mean, I really didn't care, like, again, for the honey. I didn't even harvest honey, which I could have within the first 2 years. It was only on my third year that I actually began to harvest it, once I was like, oh, I guess I should do something with this. And then I maybe got, 200 pounds, which seems like a lot, but for how many bees I had, it wasn't a whole lot. Next year, I got close to 600 pounds. And then this year so far, I've gotten close to about half a ton.
And you were able to sell that all through, originally through, like, just friends and families. And I think you put a sign up, like, in your house around there, honey's available here, like fresh honey.
I live on a pretty busy street in Charlotte, so not
good foot traffic.
Yeah, I just put a sign out. And also the hives were in the front yard too. So I'd be like working on the hives and people would see me and be like, oh, you clearly have bees. They didn't usually know what that was if just the boxes were out there, but if they saw me in the suit, it's like, all right,
he's that's got a honey. Beekeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so then you're making the honey, and obviously that becomes a little bit of a revenue generator, right?
More so like a hobby. Like, it brings, it's like a side hustle, because it's a lot of work, and it's also very expensive up front. Like, I was in the red for maybe 3 years.
Okay. But that's what I'm saying. So then the making the honey gives you some money, no? Right?
Like, to keep doing your
honey and money. Honey and money. Mm-hmm. And now you have, or last toll, something up to around your apiary is up to 20 hives, something like that?
I did the count the other day. It's closer to 50 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
Oh, that's a lot. How many bees are in one hive?
Great question.
Thank you. Yeah, I just thought of it right now.
It's a great question because it's so hard to answer. In peak season, usually around the beginning of summer, I'd say anywhere from 40,000 to 60,000 bees.
Per hive?
Per hive.
Holy.
Yeah. That's
so
a lot.
When you say I have 50 hives, that means I basically have about 500,000 to maybe 750,000 bees in my yard at all times.
Okay, so then we have this problem that we don't have enough bees in the world, like pollinating honeybees, or that's what I'm told. That's what you read about.
Ed Begley Jr. wants you to know.
Ed Begley Jr.
Yeah, he's like a big earth guy.
Right, okay. So, like, how many would be enough? Because 500,000 bees for one person, that seems like an enormous amount of bees.
Yeah, I definitely don't recommend everyone go out and get 500,000 bees tomorrow. Yeah. Though I do advocate people to get bees just because, yes, we are going through a crisis where we do need to be helping the bee populations. But also, like, it's really cool. But to answer your question, like, the real problem seems to be not so much nowadays that we're losing honeybees. They're basically becoming domesticated. They're basically becoming like cows and chickens, like where you will, I'm guessing, like within the next 20, 30 years, we'll only be seeing them in someone's like apiary, someone actually keeping them because
not in the wild.
Yeah. Because the wild populations, those are the ones that like really can't deal with the viruses that are being transmitted by the pests that we've introduced to them. And unless we get a good rap on that, they're not going to really survive. So we can keep them. Beekeepers can keep them using methods that limit that exposure to those things. But the ones in the wild are becoming a lot less and less.
So,
but won't that adversely affect just wildlife and just plant life in general? Because, I mean, I know bees aren't the only organisms to pollinate plant life, but they're a significant one, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, aside from them doing their job in the wild, what say that, like, when you're just in the middle of, you know, Yosemite and it, like, a or any natural forest or so, like, what like how does that area then continue to be pollinated and thrive?
Right, so
that's the problem, right?
pretty much. Their concern for honeybees is more so agriculture. So a third to a quarter of the food that you eat on your dinner plate is made because of honeybees, because of their pollination efforts. Mm-hmm. So you'll see a lot of large scale agriculture. You'll see these people bringing in honeybees to pollinate the plants, especially like in almonds in California.
Because don't get Max started on almonds in California, oh, please.
I thought I liked bees.
I listened to the peanut butter podcast. I should have known better.
Yeah. Yeah. So, thank you for listening.
Oh, you mean the almond butter podcast? Yeah.
No, so these agriculture, they're bringing in bees to their specific farms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they honestly have to at this point.
Yeah. Okay. But if you have your own hive, it's not like your bees stay on campus. Like, the whole purpose of the bees is so that they can head out and go around, right, to pollinate areas. Mm-hmm. Like, you let your bees loose, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can. And then, obviously, because that's how they have to go out and they have to find pollen all around and nectar and everything. They have to find everything all in the neighboring areas and then bring it back to the hive, right, to then make the honey. Right?
Right, which brings up an interesting point, a little bit of a tangent. No one can ever label their honey as organic because, though you may not treat your bees with chemicals or something, you have no idea where they have gotten their food sources from. So they could have gone to your neighbor's yard and said, well, they're using Roundup or whatever, and it's got chemicals in it. Or even if you're in an agricultural site where you're only using, you know, organic chemicals, you will come across, they're going to go some yard way over there, and they're going to have some.
You can't raise, like, hippie bees? You're like, these bees were raised in Carrboro, and they only choose organic.
If there's anyone that could have done that, it would be me by now, and it's not working, believe me. They're not, they're still very aggressive, too, so that goes for the...
Okay, what if you had a 2-mile radius where everything was certified organic? Because bees only, they travel, like, what, up to 2 miles to find the nectar?
Right. So in that instance, yes, you could, but still the USDA will not let
you. They will not approve. There is no organic honey. It's just like there's no Tuscanies, no villas in Tuscany.
Well, let's talk about a biodome.
Oh.
What if you were in a biodome, right? Okay, anyways, now let's not talk about biodomes. No, but,
okay, there's one thing, though, I'm confused about. You mentioned that we need more honeybees in the wild.
Hmm.
But if we can... What's the difference in, if we domesticate them and all farmers have hives that help to pollinate their stuff? That seems to me like a pretty reasonable solution, no? There seems to be a negative connotation to that.
So the real concern, as I'm learning, is because we can domesticate bees, because we can keep them, we can ensure that they are going to survive.
Okay.
And though they play a very important role to maybe our culture system, just the regular ecology of systems around us are mainly held together due to just regular pollinators, regular bees, wild bees that do not have a system that honeybees do that allows them to flourish. To, you know, they're eusocial. They have a system of where
hierarchy,
exactly. They're very, very functional. Most of the native bees that we see in this region and all across the country, all across the world, are solitary in that they have one mother. She digs a hole in the ground somewhere or in a tree or in a fruit or something like that. She bursts out a bunch of other offspring. They go then make their place, but it's really just like a family rather than an entire system. So when we're talking about saving the bees, what I'm talking about saving the bees now, as much as I do feel that there should still be a concern for honeybees as they do play an important role, the bigger concern and focus should be towards smaller native bees that don't have the advantage of being held together by beekeepers, by scientists, by, I have to say, big honey, you know, people putting money into this stuff. There's not a whole lot of effort going into, as much effort as we need to, towards these native bees.
Okay, so it's native bees that we need to help more so than the honeybees. What is the rudimentary issue of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just like we figured out how to harvest honeybees, why is there work being done to find a way to stimulate the population of these native bees?
There is, but a lot.
I mean, just like any other species, right? Like the wolves are endangered species, mm-hmm. so then we not domesticate them, but we keep them in closures, try to help them populate.
We protect them. We put them in protective areas.
And then try, the idea is to release them in the wild, and they repopulate naturally. So, is their programs the same for the native bees?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you find like a population of some certain wasp or bee that you're like, wow, that's really, like, ecologists will come out and say, oh, you found this? Okay, we need to preserve this area so that it doesn't come in contact with any sort of development. But that's the biggest threat to them is, of course, as we probably all know by now, climate change, development, deforestation, desertification, all these sort of things that are impacting their homes, their natural habitats. So we can do as much as we can towards preserving them when we see them, but as far as like keeping their homes safe or giving them a space for a new home,
yeah.
that's becoming increasingly more challenging.
So we have a lot of homeless bees is what we're saying.
Yes.
And what we need to do is create like bee projects, and like we need to create homes. We need to develop places for bees to live, because a bee is going to go do what a bee does, and that means it's going to go out into the wild and it's going to go do its task. Whether and all bees, I know, and we can get into the what all their tasks are, but they're the worker bees. For you know, I've seen the Jerry Seinfeld movie, the bee movie.
Yes,
I know.
But those are specifically, correct me if I'm wrong, but those are specifically honeybees that have that hierarchy.
Those are the honeybees. Yeah.
Yes,
but bees in general, like they all have different tasks, and so the bees are going to go out into the wild. They're going to do their thing. But what we're saying is, we need like a place where they can rest at night. They need a home. They need they need protection. They need a habitat, and that's where we need big honey to build more homes, right? Like because the bees aren't being they're not being safeguarded at night. They're not like their homes and like where they not only create honey but just where they build their infrastructure of their own house and their family life, whatever, with all the different tasks and all the different roles of bees is being
so
threatened.
I think that's the question, though. What is the role? Are you saying that the native bees are better, more effective pollinators than honeybees are?
They tend to be more selective. So there's certain flowers that are only pollinated by certain bees.
I see. So those are their jobs.
Yeah. And simply put, economically, no one's saving the native bees because they're not producing the honey.
Right.
They're like, well, you guys don't really serve a purpose that I can quickly make cash off of, mm-hmm. so fuck off.
Pretty much.
Got it. Okay, so you have a program called the Hive Host Program.
Sure.
But that's for honeybees.
It is.
Okay.
It's more so as well as giving people a place to set up bees to help them have bees for the effort of pollination. Because a lot of people I talk to, they say, I have a vegetable garden and I haven't seen bees on my flowers for years. And then as soon as bees move in, honeybees, they're like, wow, this is erupting. I have no idea what I'm going to do with all these vegetables. Mm. So that's a really cool advantage. You get the honey too. But more importantly, as I've learned through the experience of keeping bees, that it has just boosted my overall love and attention towards nature. Once I like see the inner workings of a hive, as I will explain to you, it's just like, it just blows your mind away. That's what captivated me so much when I first experienced it, that made me want to have, you know, like 50 some hives. Like it's really that cool.
That's something I want you to tell. I want you to tell us a little bit about like the some of the phenomenal stories of like bee life and like what bees are prone to do and things that you didn't realize bees actually did as a society. But before you say that, I would like to talk about something that is so delicious with honey. And we're talking about coffee, my friends.
Yeah.
You get a little coffee, you get a little natural sweetener with some honeybee, and you put it inside some Joe Van Gogh coffee. I mean, why not? I'm having cold brew coffee right now from Joe Van Gogh. I went with my daughters yesterday to the Durham Joe Van Gogh, and we had such an amazing experience. I had their cold brew with lemon and basil and some fresh Pellegrino in there. So it was sparkling, nutty, fruity, herbally, and herbaceous, and it was fantastic. So rather than talking about a particular bag of beans today, I'm talking about going to a Joe Van Gogh coffee shop because they're amazing. They're fun. You can also get like cool swag there. Elizabeth's got a cool new tea that they have, and great stuff. So you can get all your coffee beans and a great coffee cocktail while you're there. So go to jovango.com for more information and give them a chance.
Yeah, and I also say go to Triangle Wine Company and you can get your sparkling waters or maybe something to make a coffee cocktail.
Oh yeah.
You know, or a coffee and vermouth something. I'm sure you could create something with that your brilliant
they have bitters there
cocktail
too.
Bitters, yeah. But Triangle Wine Company, you know, they are in three locations now, Cary and Waverly Place, Holly Springs, and out in Southern Pines. And go online, trianglewineco.com. Don't forget to use the NCFB promo code for a nice little discount.
Yeah. All right, Justin, tell us something that you found fascinating about bee life and culture.
Oh, man, where to start? So they have a system, as we talked about a little bit earlier, where essentially as the bee ages, it becomes, its job changes. So when it's born, its first job is basically to clean the cell that it came out of. After that, it then helps other bees, becomes a nurse bee essentially, in the nursery of the hive, where it's then helping, feeding the larva, and then helping the bees as they emerge, and then to become nurse bees themselves. After that point, and I'm missing a few stages, there's like, I think 10 different stages, but these are the main ones.
Yeah, all the bee nerds at home are like, oh, he totally missed this. Others, ease back, everybody.
Can I, yeah. You have something that you can see in the hive, and are you like watching these live? Can you actually see this with the human eye?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, he's got Nest cams on his Google phone.
I wish that's the next stage. No.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. How like do you cut in? How do you see that? How does that physically manifest?
So the hive, as we're talking about, these are called Langstroth hives, and this is the most modern hive setup, the most common you'll see.
Langstroth,
yes. It's a beekeeper, one of the founding fathers of beekeeping, modern beekeeping from the, I believe, 19th century. He invented this this hive where it's essentially separated by frames. Mm-hmm. There's a certain width between each frame that allows the bees not to build comb anywhere but onto the frame, so that when you pull the frame out, it comes out nice and neat. The queen lays eggs in it, they store honey in it, they store pollen in it, and it's, to them, a perfect home. But yeah, that's how I'm able to pull it out and actually observe what's going on. If I didn't have that, we didn't have that set up. I think before this was those like skips, those cone things they made out of like twine, or I don't even know. Yeah. But and as they had to like destroy the entire thing
to observe.
Yeah, or to just, they would basically just like let the bees do as they do, and at the end of the year they would destroy it, destroying the bees, destroying the hive, and then take the honey. So it was a really bad process. This Langstroth hive is much better.
You know, but in the process of, and I want you to get back to the life cycle of the bee, but at some point there were bees that, like, once they grew up out of a certain stage, they became builder bees, right? They would make the hive, like out in the wild, like where Winnie the Pooh's got the hive, mm-hmm. and he's grabbing the hive and he's sticking his hand in there. But that hive itself is no longer being fabricated because of Langstroth, right? Like, because now you guys are building homes for the bees, that job ceases to exist in hive. Is that fair to say? Or like, if you're not building the comb any longer, then what? Like, did the bees just go, oh yeah, we don't need to do that any longer, we're good now, you can, your efforts are best in this job instead?
No, so much so, the frames, as I'm putting them in there, it's like a blank canvas, it's got maybe wax on it or something that they will then build comb onto.
Oh, okay, so they build the comb inside of the framing,
right? Yep.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, nice. They build a lot of comb. Now if you're getting into honeybees, you know, if anyone's out there listening to this and says, oh, I want wax, I want to keep bees, I want to get wax, do not do that. They make 1 pound of wax per 5 pounds of honey they produce. They only make wax when they have honey in season. So it's a very, very small amount. In the 4 years I've been doing this, only this year did I get in a significant amount of wax. And that usually just comes from like the opening the honey and the process of actually extracting the honey. Do I get this wax? So I don't get a whole lot of wax. It's very precious to them. So I often don't take any more than I need to because it's essentially their building blocks, their cement to creating the hive. I provide the box, they build the wax.
Interesting. Okay. So you go from the baby to like then the nurse, and then after they've kind of taken care of internally, what then are the roles after that? Once they kind of become, I guess, what, like young adults as bees? What,
teenage bees.
Teenagers, where do they go?
I imagine teenage bees are the ones that sting me, or the guards, essentially. And that would be the next stage after you go through this period of nursery to then you're kind of following the queen around, getting instructions, helping her, feeding her. And at that point, you get your wings, you go fly, you take an orientation flight, kind of get a scene of what's around you, and then you become the guard bee, from which you spend, I think it'd be like 2 weeks, maybe a week, until your final stage is that of a forager, where you're going out, getting food, essentially working yourself to death. Bees only live about 42 days, so 7 weeks, 6-7 weeks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the life of a bee. Is it like a little, like a month and a half?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
But the queens live 3 to 5 years on average.
Yeah, because they're just sitting around getting fed and, you know, living the royal life.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So, okay. And you did something pretty awesome. And I'm assuming you learned this at beekeeping school. So you physically manifested the ability to split the hive. Mm-hmm. Did you learn that at beekeeping, or you figured it out how to do it, or how did that come about?
Yeah, most definitely learned that at the school.
So that's a usual practice that they're doing. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you have to essentially, so if I read this correctly, once the queen is kind of past her prime, they will kill the queen and anoint a new queen, right? Mm-hmm. So how did you circumvent that to create the other hive?
So I do that in a variety of ways. Sometimes, rarely, I have to euthanize her myself.
Okay.
So she may be on her last leg, literally, laying a lot less eggs, and it's at a time in the year where it's not really advantageous for them to make a new queen, or it's like, this is the last week you guys can do this, so you better do it now, or you're not going to survive to the winter. But more often, I make a split. I take the old queen and a bunch of bees, and then put them into a new box from which that old box that they came from, they will basically make a new queen once that old queen has left. What I'm doing is essentially fooling them into thinking that the hive has swarmed, because we all hear about these bee swarms. All it really is when the old queen, basically what I just did, flies away with maybe a third to a half of the population of the bees in the hive to go make a new hive somewhere else.
So that will happen naturally?
Yes.
Okay. But you just essentially like direct them towards this other box that you have?
Yeah, I'm nipping it in the bud because I don't want them to go into a tree or on the side of a building or in my garage.
Like, so I'm why does the queen do that? Why does the queen decide at some point like, oh, I'm good, it's time to move on?
Great question. It's basically their way of reproducing. So if they have, as often happens, so many bees in the hive that they're like, okay, we gotta, like, this is too many, we're too cramped, someone's gotta leave. They're basically saying, wow, we were able to raise this many bees in this hive, we must have good genes, we must have something going on to where we can maybe
franchise this biatch.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then how do they elect or anoint a new queen?
Yeah.
Like, because, and this new queen gets fed from as soon as they come out of whatever it is that they come out of, right?
Like, I hope they're not counting votes out of Florida.
They get the royal jelly right away. They get the royal treatment. Is there like bloodline lineage? I mean, I don't know how you would possibly know that, but how is the new queen discovered, anointed?
So she's actually created, it's a really cool process. So what they'll do is
it's from a baby, right? Or from a
From an egg.
From an egg.
Yeah, they're basically starting it from scratch. So they'll see an egg, they'll see maybe I've seen at most maybe like 24 eggs where they'll then start feeding it royal jelly. And then after maybe about 17 days, from that egg will hatch out a new baby queen. Now, if there are 24 queens that will hatch out, there can only be one queen in a hive. So what will happen essentially is those queens will either, some will maybe fly away and then say, I don't want to, there's too many queens in this hive, I'm getting out of here. But sometimes also they will essentially fight to the death, survival of the fittest, you know, eliminate the ones that are too weak to survive. And then therefore they're basically, the queens are electing who will be the queen of the hive.
How so do bees fight? Like, I thought if they sting each other, then they die, right?
That's it, yep.
So it's like the last one that doesn't sting that somehow survives is the survivor, the queen.
It's usually the one that hatches out first, because she will have the advantage of going around to the ones that haven't hatched out. They're basically in a cocoon, they may be alive, and they're just not able to get out yet, and she'll just, like, stab them to death with her stinger.
But she doesn't die if she stabs them to death with the stinger?
So only when they sting us, really, do they lose the stinger that then kills them.
Okay.
It doesn't happen if they just sting other insects or other bees.
And then that bee who becomes the queen is always the queen until she swarms or leaves the nest. She's born a queen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Royal jelly.
Royal jelly.
Please explain.
It's a really interesting substance. Some people do use it for health products. I think it's like able to help with diabetes and stuff, but it's just like milky, like paste, kind of like glue. Mm-hmm. Every worker bee can actually produce it. They have like a bunch of hormones that secrete all sorts of stuff, and this is one of them. They can produce this royal jelly, which once the bee has been fed this royal jelly from its very early stages, it will have different properties, mainly that of ovaries or an ovipositor, that will allow her to not only get mated but also lay eggs.
Wow. So that queen bee is not as such. That's how it becomes a queen bee, is because it's fed the royal jelly.
Yeah.
And then that kind of literally changes their biology biology into a completely different unit. Because obviously a queen bee looks completely different than a typical bee. And that's just how it was fed, I assume.
Yep. She has that's one of the harder things about beekeeping, is distinguishing the difference between a queen bee and a regular bee, especially when she's not mated. Mm. Once she's mated, her abdomen becomes a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But yeah, she only gets fed that in her early stages, and that gives her like longer wings, again, the ovaries, and a little bit different characteristics. And of course, she can live almost 5 years if everything goes right.
Yeah, that she's been fed that royal jelly.
I want to make a cocktail with like honey royal in it jelly. Called royal jelly.
That'd be cool. Yes.
I'm sure I'm not the first person to think of that.
No, okay. You're not just a bee guy. You're not just you're an insect guy. You love bugs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just like, this is fascinating, because I was just this weekend, you know, the Natural Science Museum in Raleigh has this new exhibit about the Permian era, which is before the Triassic. So these are the archosaurs that predated dinosaurs. Ooh. Like back to...
Nerd alert.
Yeah, 299 million years. So it was like almost 50 plus million years before dinosaurs even came about, and there's all these others. And then it's like about the introduction of mammals and stuff like that. How long have we known about the existence of bees?
How long have we known about them?
When do they date to, like, as far as we know?
I think the number is around, oh my God, I know someone's going to butcher me for this, but 60 million years.
Okay.
So
after dinosaurs, we have the evolution of bees.
Right. And I think someone said it was before the dinosaurs. Anyway, the point of saying that is like, the whole, it kind of puts a sham to the whole save the bees concept, because
they've survived for this long.
Yeah.
But we didn't have... you know, harvesting like we do now, and deforestation back then, and all mm-hmm. these other things that are harming the planet.
Sure. We had a meteor, bro.
Yeah.
Right. That meteor apparently did all of that.
But it makes sense that bees could survive the meteor because they could just either hive or burrow under something.
Yeah, but if all plant life was dead, then their food source would die, and that's how they would no longer live, right? I mean, that's like, bees aren't just dying. It's, we're talking about like their environment. Their mm-hmm. environment is what's keeping them from thriving, right? So if the environment was all messed up, then they wouldn't have a place to hang out. They're all a bunch of homeless bees.
Yeah. Well, but that's also having the concept of home is a shelter from their, whatever their natural predator is. Mm.
And a food source. They need a food source.
Yeah, but I wouldn't see the food source would be the problem.
Well, if you had an ice age, if we're talking about like an ice age, and then the food sources get diminished so significantly, I mean, perhaps it wasn't like that all over the world, but and maybe there was just some parts and pockets, you know, on the equator that probably didn't completely ice over, that they could just live there, you know, possibly. Look at me, I don't know.
I would say bees are very opportunist, so... for example, if they don't have honey to forage from flowers, especially in like a, you know, metropolitan setting, you may see people having hives on their roof, where they're going to get their food from is trash. They're going to go into sodas, candy bars, anything sugary substance. They're going to get that because they're very smart. They have systems that allow them to deal with turmoil, to deal with stress, so that really anything you throw at them, they're probably going to be able to figure out how to survive it. Unless, of course, it's the main threat to them are these tiny little red mites called varroa mites. Their actual scientific name is varroa destructor. They're so destructive that they've given them that.
You see them like crawling all over bees. I've seen the documentaries, and that's like the one that really destroys the from the inside, right? Mm-hmm. From the hive.
Yeah, it spreads viruses. It basically feeds off the food stores of the young bees so that when they develop, when they become older, they won't be able to live for very long. So that's the most catastrophic thing towards their survival.
So you mentioned these urban hives and all, and if their food sources are coming from trash, are you not a supporter of urban foods, of urban hives for that reason?
Supporter of trash honey.
trash honey, that'd be a good company.
So I wouldn't, like, Raleigh would be fine. There's still plenty of trees. I'm looking at trees right now. There's plenty of trees around here. What I would say is if you had a hive in, you know...
Manhattan?
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe. Like, that would be kind of... I don't know. I wouldn't want to eat that honey. But
you have Central Park, right? And that's a massive...
Still a lot of trees in Manhattan, in New York City. Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. If you're in a very, like, non-thriving...
urban.
Forested area, if it's a very urban area. Like, San Francisco is pretty, like, there's not a lot of trees in San Francisco. I mean, yes, there are trees, of course. And then you've got, like, the Presidio and all that. But, like, it's pretty urban.
Golden Gate Bridge Park.
Yeah, you got those parks and all that. But, I'm trying to understand what you're saying. Like, if you're in a space where there's not a lot of, you know, if you're, I guess, maybe inner city Chicago or so, where there are very few parks, and you put a... If your food source is now not from natural trees and plant life, but it is more from secondary trash that we're throwing away, then I assume like the quality of the honey that you would provide would maybe not be the best. I'm leading you there, but is that part of why you would say that's not the best place to have a hive?
I would just say you probably won't get a whole lot of honey from them. Like, I would say probably the most suspect hive would be if you're right next to a dump. Like, if there was like, there's all these flowers over here, but also here's all this really smelly, sweet trash. And for whatever reason, bees love really smelly things, unfortunately. Yeah. They love, like, the water I set out for them. If I, like, put in a bunch of fresh water, they're like... I'm not touching that. And then after like a week or two, when it becomes like algae and muck and all this stuff, they're like, that's great, let's go. I would say you wouldn't be getting a whole lot of honey. And at the certain time of the year where there are an abundance of flowers to bloom, sure, yeah, they would get some pretty delicious honey from those flowers. But if you were to harvest later in the year when there's what we call a dearth, when there's not a lot of flowers, I would not eat that honey. Yeah, that's probably trash honey.
Okay, well, let's talk about your honey, your actual honey. You brought some in with you today, and in the process of it, what makes your honey its own style, or what is the style of your honey, and are there like particular flavor notes that are consistent with your honey versus others, and if so, how and why?
Well, the most interesting thing about my honey is that it is raw, and raw honey, if everyone's talking about the purposes of helping your allergies, that's what you want. If you have allergies and you're like, I need to take honey, don't buy store-bought stuff on the shelf. Essentially what they do is they pasteurize it and they filter out all the nutritional benefits that are supposed to be in honey. So my honey, more importantly, most importantly, is raw. Not only does it have this antihistamine property, but also has antioxidants. It's better than just natural sugars if you're using any sort of sweetener. Highly recommend that. It's got a pretty floral note, as you're probably noticing. What I do is I mix my spring and summer, or rather early summer harvest, together. It's kind of making like a malt of two different flavors, because I like the spring, but I don't get quite enough of it to make a batch of that individually, so I have to mix it with the summer. And the spring is much lighter. Yeah. They have fewer food sources to go towards in the spring. It's lighter. It's a little less viscous. I think that's right. Viscous is when it's like thicker. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Right.
And it's a little bit sweeter too, whereas the early summer is darker, which darker actually means that there's more antioxidants in it than the lighter versions. And I think since there's more things to feast on and forage on in the summer, you get a much bolder, more varying taste than when you just have like a few select sources to get the nectar from.
We all just call back to last week's Ted Lasso reference about sticking our fingers in the jar and eating peanut
butter.
Yeah,
but we didn't stick it back in. That's
no,
the
we
thing.
Took the lid. I'm a civilized person. Took the lid, and then we all dipped our finger onto the lid and got a little taste of it. I don't know if you guys, both Elizabeth and Matt, you guys just tried this. I'm getting like fresh cornmeal maize. Like if you ever just make like fresh tortillas, just straight up, like that's what I'm getting that like kind of fresh corn. Makes me think like, do you live near a cornfield and like do the bees go towards corn? It almost tastes like that.
So it's 90% corn syrup, actually. I just like, you know, cut it with.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's probably someone growing corn around me, but...
Am I wrong? Did anybody get that flavor, Matt? You're a sommelier. Come on.
Mine was very much more, and maybe it's because you said it, more like the flower. Like if you ground up...
It was flower, yeah.
Yeah. Like lilac, lavender, mm-hmm. almost.
I don't eat corn. Any, like, corn tortillas or anything, so...
You don't eat corn.
No,
okay. Say this on microphone. Wait, you don't eat corn?
I don't eat corn or corn tortillas. Right?
For what reason?
I don't know. I don't like the texture.
Are you an American? Like, that's half of our diet.
Yeah.
I know.
Corn is basically...
Show me your citizenship.
Animal feed for humans. That's like the way... It's American animal feed, right?
That's
American human feed.
I don't want to eat it, like, because it's in everything that I can't control. So I don't want to, like, go out and eat something that I know is, like, corn-based, because I'm already getting enough corn in everything else I eat.
Did you know Europeans very rarely eat corn?
That doesn't surprise me.
It's
not
like
good
corn's
for you.
Not that big of a... product in Europe. Like it exists, but mm-hmm. it's not like ubiquitous in everything like it is in America. And Europeans tend to look at Americans that like eat, like their American diet is like a corn, like they look at it like Americans are eating like animal feed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we're all just eating corn.
Yeah. They like to grow wheat.
They grow wheat,
yeah.
And they also have a much more diverse diet in general.
Yeah, but also their farming is so much more subsidized in general than our. Not to say that our farming isn't subsidized, but it is subsidized to help all the beef industry and all these big ag, as we say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, not like the smaller family farms.
Right, where we're just like, let's just have the next 400 miles just be a cornfield.
Yeah. But I wonder, like, do you ever study or do you know beekeepers abroad in Europe, and are they having the same problems and issues that you are?
I want to circle back for one thing about the Ted Lasso thing and dipping your finger in.
Yeah.
Because my girlfriend and I have been watching Ted Lasso a lot, and I noticed that too. I was like, would that work for honey? And the thing about honey is that it has such a high osmotic pressure, basically nothing can survive in it. So no pathogens, no living creatures can survive in the honey. So not saying it's antibacterial, don't like put it on your hands if you're, you know, just walked out of a hospital, but you don't have to worry about it ever spoiling. They actually found some honey in King Tut's tomb, I don't know, maybe a couple years ago, and it was still good, still edible. What may happen is that it will crystallize over time, it'll get cold and turn back into sugar. But if you ever have that, the honey's not spoiled, it's not wrong. You just have to put it in the microwave for a little while and then it settles back. What will happen though is if the moisture content is too high in the honey when you harvest it, then it could turn into what we call mead, you know, ferments. It has the yeast actually are able to survive in it, but otherwise.
Get drunk off it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, honey's kind of a miracle entity. Like, it's crazy. It's all shelf stable, right? And it never goes bad, essentially, like you just said. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you could.
But it's the one thing that you're supposed to not give to infants.
Because of botulism.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's more on the infant, right? Because the infant can't,
exactly. It
hasn't created that immune system, that part of the system.
To digest it.
It's not the honey's fault.
Right.
Yeah, it's the damn
infants, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And will they learn?
I mean, so, okay. What else, though? Like, so you're teaching people, which is pretty cool, about how to beekeep. What, but it's supposed to be like, it's pretty hard labor to actually control and upkeep a hive for the human as well.
It's like, intense, yeah.
Yeah, if you have like a 250,000 bees, what's
half a million.
Is it like 500,000 bees? Yeah, but whatever, you have a lot of bees. Mm-hmm. What's your staff look like? Is it just you or is it you and a whole team?
It's me.
It's just you?
Just me,
yeah. And you're producing how much honey, let's say, roughly, like, in, do you know how much honey you're producing, like, in a year, let's say?
So every hive produces on average 30 to 50 pounds of honey. So this year I had to start with, I had, about 30 hives. So 30 times about 30 was 900. So, and I got just about that. I haven't harvested at all this year, so I'm still estimating that I'm going to get close to half a ton. It's looking like that. But yeah, the whole work towards doing it, it's really intense in the beginning of the year in spring, and then it starts to slow down, taper off until, I mean, winter, you're not really doing a whole lot. That's when I go on vacation, and a lot of other beekeepers do. But the reason I love teaching people about bees and how to keep them is because while we're all worried about, you know, the Varroa mites and everything, a common expression that goes around to beekeepers is the biggest threat to bees is new beekeepers that don't know what they're doing. I can say that for myself, too, because, I mean, I barely lost, or I almost lost both my hives in the first year, just based to, like, not knowing what I was doing, letting them swarm off, all this stuff. So knowing what you're doing, having, you know, not just like YouTube videos and classes and stuff where you're like just writing stuff down and learning it, like actually getting your hands in hive and understanding, like, this is what this looks like, this is how to deal with this, that's how you're going to be able to cross that bridge without having much failure and loss, because it's pretty expensive and sad to lose bees.
So for your hive host program, which is somewhat, I assume, local to Charlotte area, you come and help these individuals who have joined the program like every other week to upkeep their hive. Is that right? Are you still doing that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. That's really what I'm trying to grow into. As I mentioned, I love honey, but I really love bees a lot more in the process of teaching people about bees. That's just, you know, that's what I'm in this year for.
So this is something, I mean, at the end of the day, Queen's Orders Beekeeping is not just selling honey. It's you're generating revenue from this as well. I'm just trying to understand the business aspect of
it. Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I have the honey. I have the hive host where I keep take care of other people's hives.
Okay.
Like a gardener where their garden. I come by as needed a lot more in the spring, and then again tapers off to where I'm not coming a whole lot. In the fall and winter, I also teach people. It's basically the same thing as the Hive Host program, where people then shadow me and to then see, oh, this is how I take care of bees. And after a couple of weeks, maybe months, maybe an entire year, if they go to the whole seasons, they know what to take, how to take care of the bees, and are not worried about loss or anything like that. And if they still need me after that point, I can come over and visit their hive and take a look at what they're going on. and I catch swarms. I do presentations, you know, anything bee related. I'm trying to do this thing called this is, can you put like a disclaimer on this? Is like intellectual property of Queen's Order's honey or something? But this
you
is
just
a,
did.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Don't go stealing this. This is his, everybody.
Yeah. No stealing this. It's not patented yet, but I don't think I have to fear this too much. It's called Bee Yoga. I'm also a yoga instructor.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you think goat yoga? Well, how about that with bees? You basically pour honey all over yourself and then go out in the bee yard and the bees like land on you, and in the process...
Wait, this isn't a joke. You're really doing this.
I literally done this. I have not done this to a like audience, but I've done this myself and it actually was pretty cool.
You pour honey on yourself. I mean, it sounds pretty hot right now, but you pour honey on yourself and then go out there. Like you take your shirt off and you throw honey all over yourself and then you let the bees just kind of hang out.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
I mean, it seems totally fine, but what's the benefit? Like, are they, like, massaging you or something? Or, like, is it, like, does it, this sounds silly, does it feel nice? Like, is it, like, soothing? Is
what's
that
the benefit?
Why would you do that?
So, the whole point of yoga.
Why would you do this thing?
There's a lot of reasons.
No, I get why you do yoga, but yeah. Why would you do yoga with a bunch of bees all over you?
So, in yoga, they always teach you to, you know, be still, be calm, sort of... soothe the nervous system by breathing and movement, align with breath. So if you're covered in bees, that becomes a little bit harder because you're like, wait, what? Now I have tiny flying stinging insects around me that can make this a lot harder. If they sting me, they get caught in an elbow joint and you bend backwards, You squish them, they're going to sting you. But in general, I think it's just like a way to show people just how chill bees are because... they are. Like, I go at my bee yard, and I'm not, like, wearing anything. I just go around my hives, and they're not stinging me. They're not actually, like, trying to hurt me. When I'm doing bee yoga, they're literally just eating the honey off me. And, yes, it does feel really cool to have a bunch of bees eating honey off my body.
How do you get them off when you're done?
I just kind of jump. I just kind of, like, shake them off, and they all just fly away. Yeah.
But you still have the honey on you.
Yeah,
and I gotta like run.
Well, hopefully not. If they ate it all off me, then that's the point. But if not, I'll just go like wash off somewhere.
Wow.
And you don't get stung at all during this?
I've never gotten stung doing that. No.
Is there a video of this happening somewhere?
Yeah, we need a YouTube video of this.
I have a video, but you really can't see the bees very well. So you just kind of see me doing yoga in the yard, and it's very hot, and that's it. Like, hot as in, like,
yeah, warm.
Yeah, like, this is an OnlyFans / Justin's orders.
Elizabeth might sign up for that, though.
I mean, there's probably some bee kink out there. I'm not really sure.
It sounds kinky, but it also sounds cool. I mean, why not? Yeah. I mean, the goats, that's passe. We've done goats already.
We're on to bee yoga.
Yeah.
The bees don't poop on you. The goats will poop all over you, a bee on your mat, all this sort of stuff. So bees will at least, like, you know, just be with you, you know, bee yoga.
There's one other thing that before we get out here that I saw. You use this technique about creating smoke to avoid getting stung, and somehow this has the guard bees thinking that the hive is on fire, or it alerts them so that they don't sting you. Can you elaborate on that?
You did a really good job right there. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I'm still a little unclear about how that works.
So, so bees can't see very well. They fly. They don't even really fly very well, but they do smell very well. Everything in their world is in relation to smell. Mm-hmm. They can smell honey. They can smell food sources. They can smell threats. And they mark a threat whenever they sting you. When the stinger gets stuck in your skin and then releases a pheromone that tells the other bees, okay, sting this person. They're a threat. So if I take the smoke and then put that on that area, or really just around me, they are like, wait, what? We thought there was a threat here? Wait, disregard, go back to the hive. And just kind of cools them off.
Because they don't smell the pheromone because the smoke muffles the smell?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Just masks the smell. It's overpowering to the smell of the pheromone.
Ooh, I'm just thinking that royal jelly cocktail needs to have mezcal in it. The smoked mezcal.
Yes.
Mm.
But then how do... if there was an actual fire, they would try to flee the hive. So how do they not? How come? How do you place it so they don't flee the hive then?
They don't normally flee the hive. Instead, they really just gorge themselves on honey. I've been trying to get in the head of a bee to figure out why they do this exactly. I think they're really just like, if we actually have to flee the hive, we're going to put as much honey into our honey stomachs, and then we'll flee if it really becomes, if they start actually feeling like the flames of the fire.
Yeah.
Smoke is not that big of a deal. But also, they could just be gorging themselves because they're, like, about to die. So whatever you want to think about that, I'm not really sure.
Or they're, what is it called when you, or preppers, like you prepare for the end of the world or the end of the,
Was it William Randolph Hearst in the Hearst Castle?
Mm-hmm.
They have this...
Your old neck of the woods.
Yeah, the Central Coast. But, you know, Felicia's mom grew up with one of the Hearst women and, like, knows the Hearst family, like, intimately. And we had this tour, and, like, their cellar is, like, world-renowned, at least at the time when it was activated, because this is one of the richest men in the world. And he had this insane cellar of wine, any wine you wanted from all over, from any vintage. And upon his death, they were giving the house, like, the house was relinquished to the government.
Yeah.
And so the family said...
I've heard this story elsewhere. I don't think this is from you, but...
Yeah, the family was like, wait a minute, this whole place is going to the government? And they're like, yeah, like, what about the wine cellar? And they're like, it just says the whole place is going. So the night before, or it was like the week before... All the, like, dudes and cousins and whatever, a bunch of the guys, I don't mean to say it's just men, but from what I was told, it was a bunch of the guys, went in there and drank all of the wine.
Like, as much as they could.
Like, they
we're not consumed, letting this just go.
But, like, they consumed, like, an abhorrent amount of wine. And there's still empty bottles. If you go into the actual cellar now... There are empty bottles everywhere. They left them the way it was. And, like, there's just, like, BV from, like, 1922, you know, BV tapestry and all this, like, old wines from California. And they just guzzled as much as possible. Makes me think of that. Like, that's what the bees do when they're like, oh, shit.
Can't take this shit with us.
Let's just drink it all down, boys. I used to think that all the time when I was a wine rep. I don't know if you get this, Matt, but every time I'm in an elevator and I had my wine bag, I'd think, oh, if the elevator stuck and I got stuck in here, I'd have no other choice but to drink all the wine in this bag. I'd be forced to consume it all.
Yeah.
And I was kind of hoping. And you'd have to
pee and be dehydrated at the same time. So that would
Then the door would open and I'd get a little sad. And then I'd go to my appointment.
I have no wine for you because I got stuck in the elevator. And what's what the bees do?
Yeah. Anyhow, on that note, Justin, thank you for coming out here. Thank you for really just giving us a great, thoughtful conversation. This wasn't just about honey, which I love. This is about bee life and beekeeping and what it means to be a beekeeper, which is fascinating. There's still so much that we haven't even gotten into, and who knows, through questions and thoughts that come through on our social media, maybe we can continue to have this conversation.
Absolutely.
And get more education on it. But for those that want to learn more about your business and even see how you could help them, what do they need to know?
Yeah, so really, Google search Queen's Orders Honey, and you'll find me, Instagram, Facebook, or website. We're trying to do some other things here soon. More news on that on the website. But yeah, I mean, in general...
They want to do the yoga with the honey on them.
That's Charlotte. That's local to Charlotte. Yeah, okay. But there's a pretty big yoga community in Charlotte. I'm sure if anyone's hearing that, just hit me up. I don't have anything. I'm sure there's got to be a lot of, like, legal stuff for that, so... Well, that's definitely a work in progress. It's just something that I definitely want to do. And I've talked to the experts, too, and they've recommended I do this as well. So it's backed by science.
Oh, cool. And if they just want to buy your honey, just go to the website?
Yeah.
And again, that's Queen's Orders Honey.
That's it.
There you go. Well, you heard it. Go out and go to Queen's Orders Honey. Get yourself some honey, and you will eat very merrily.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.